Obama and the Ad Council.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, as most of you know, I am rarely at a loss for words, but since about 10:45 this morning, I have been completely dumbfounded, awestruck, and lacking the words to describe what it's like to walk through the Museum of the Bible opening this weekend here in Washington, D.C. We're literally three blocks off the mall. I'm looking out a window because they have TV and radio studios set up here. I'm looking at out the window. We're about three blocks away from our nation's capital. I'm looking at the dome of the Capitol building, which is just gleaming in the sunshine. And but that is not the highlight of the day. I don't think it's the highlight of the week. I don't think it'll be the highlight of the year until you come to the Museum of the Bible. I was here in May, as many of you recall, and did the show live from the Nazareth exhibit, which was under construction when I was there. And Dr. Zeiss was with me at the time. He's the executive director of the museum, where he's leading the daily operations, which his life has changed a little bit, too, since May. And it's great to have you back on. It's just mind-boggling to be here. How are you feeling?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad to have you back, Steve.
It's great to be back. And in May, I'm walking around. The stairwell was there, the central staircase, but it wasn't all decorated. Most things were covered. I couldn't even see the marble in the front entry that goes from dark to light, as we understand the scripture does the same thing for mankind. But one thing after another, Dr. Zeiss, I've just walked around in absolute shock all day. I've never seen anything like it. I've never experienced anything like it. But you've been here working on the museum and running these operations on a daily basis. What's it like for you to kind of get right here to the finish line?
Well, first of all, it's been an invigorating 10 months because we started 10 months ago building the staff to operate the museum. Of course, the construction was still going on, 3 years worth of construction, renovating this wonderful building. It's 8 stories, and we took out, well, actually it was 16 stories. We took out every other floor so we had room for the exhibits. But even though we knew what we were building, until you really see it, it's very difficult to describe. Yeah. Stunning is the word that comes to mind. Jerusalem stone when you walk in, all over the place. Of course, the tile. And, you know, most public buildings put their best foot forward and they want to showcase the lobby area. And then things kind of go down from there. But not in this building. You've been all over it. It's stunning on every.
Oh yeah, place. I mean, you walk in, and of course, the enormous digital ceiling above the check-in area, and where you would get your digital docent, which is basically like an iPad, which you can program, right, to kind of decide what you want to see during the day when you're here. And by the way, I can't even begin to touch this thing in one day. I'm going to come back every month for the next year. It's amazing the amount of content.
Right, the experts who've looked at the museum, they predict it'll take 9 8-hour days for somebody to see everything, look at every theater, go through every attraction, read everything about the relics. That's a long time.
Yeah, so that's a long time.
This is not going to be a one-and-done museum. You'll want to come back year after year.
So I should be able to get through it all by next July. That's really what we're saying.
And by then we'll have new exhibits, new rotating exhibits coming on, so you have to keep coming back.
Just remarkable. And do you have – I asked Steve Green this the last time I interviewed him, was at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and we were actually walking through kind of the mini version of many of the things that are here at the Museum of the Bible, which is opening this weekend, literally in Washington, D.C. Like I said, I look out the window behind us, and I'm looking at the nation's capital. But do you have a particular part that your favorite, Dr. Zeiss?
You know, well, I love history, so I think the history floor probably is my favorite, but everything's my favorite. The truth is, I turn the corner, I see a new exhibit. Of course, the exhibit installers have been here for the past about 5 weeks, and then we've got curators from all over the world because, you know, you borrow exhibits from other museums. So the Israeli Antiquity Authority, for example, we don't know that they've ever loaned anything out before, but they have almost 800 antiquities here in Washington, D.C., in this museum. The Vatican, we've created a smaller version of the Vatican Library with their antiquities. The Bavarian Library out of Germany, it goes on and on. We've had curators from all over the place, and it's been like a beehive. Of course, the excitement mounts, and It's like a big orchestra, Steve. We're working hard. The people are going to operate the museum. The people are operating the building. The construction workers are working on their punch lists. You're transitioning from one ownership from the contractors to the museum. And then you've had the exhibitors and the exhibitors installers. And it's like everything has to come together at the exact same time. And that's Friday. This Friday we'll be dedicating the museum.
And then it'll be open to public on the Saturday?
Correct.
Yeah, it's really and everybody I've talked to, we've already been in, and people on Facebook Live could see I'm wearing my Museum of the Bible T-shirt. We went in. That's the nicest store I've ever been to in a museum. Just spectacular. And every person we've talked to, whether it's in the store or just security people working, people still installing and doing things, little punch list things here and there, they're all so excited.
Oh, they are. And we've got 150 volunteers and docents in addition to the guest services people you're referring to. So we're up to about 160 full-time and part-time people now. We'll go to about 190.
Yeah.
And then another 150 volunteers and docents and interns who will be, most of them will be historic interpreters in the village of Nazareth.
They'll
be in period clothing, and they'll talk as we think they would have talked at the first century.
Yeah, my youngest daughter, I'm going to have my two younger kids on later in the show in the last segment. My son Clay, who's 16, and my daughter Caroline, who's 12. For Caroline, she's been in the Nazareth exhibit so many times today. It's so peaceful. It's so beautiful. And in there, all the olive trees. And there's some. Where did they get that? Like, where did that come from?
Oh yeah, that came from the Garden of Gethsemane, and they look there. I've been there. You've probably been there. They look gnarled, just like you see them, and they're big and gangly, and yet they're still producing fruit. And and that's a message there too. So we our folks took pictures of those trees or the exhibitor and measured the dimensions and came back and tried to replicate them in that.
Well, when I was here in May, I saw some of the artists working in there. They were the sculptors, basically. And I was asking them about how did they were so realistic and right down to these tiny little details of the bark. And they were explaining that to me. They took thousands of high-def pictures. But then they also used like a parchment paper because you can't take molds for obvious reasons there in the Garden of Gethsemane. But they used kind of like parchment paper with pencils where you can kind of do that outline like you would at the Vietnam War Memorial down the mall. And they were using all those pieces. And it took them, I think they told me it took them about 7 weeks to do one tree. It was one thing after another, the amazing details that were involved. When we come back, we're going to talk about kind of the mission of the Museum of the Bible with Dr. Zeiss. The mission, the role, what are we expecting to see happen as people start flooding in here this Saturday? You need to get here. Believe me, you can't get here fast enough. It is, for me, I've been walking with the Lord since 1994. I've never seen anything like this. It's massively encouraging. It's massively impactful. This is Steve Noble, Call to Action. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live from the Museum of the Bible, which is just mind-boggling. I still can't get over it. I was here in May when everything was under construction. There was drywall. There was some paint. There were some things installed here and there. But now to see it, it's just takes your breath away. And whether when you come in the lobby and you have this massive digital screen up in the ceiling, which continues to change, it's just spectacular and takes your breath away. And then floor number two is the impact of the Bible. Floor number three, the story of the Bible. Floor number four, the history of the Bible. And just in case you're bored, you can go upstairs to the World Stage Theater, which is a 500-seat theater. Amazing Grace, the musical, starts playing there, I think, this weekend. And the Manna Restaurant, which is a great name, and a ballroom. There's so much going on here, and it's going to be so cool to watch all the different ways that God is going to use the Museum of the Bible. And praise the Lord that he moved in the Green family, the Hobby Lobby family, and what an incredible legacy and lasting legacy this is going to be. But we're joined today here live at the museum. And by the way, I'll be back here pretty much once a month for the next year. I just have an incredible opportunity to come up here and do that. Selfishly, I'm going to do it because I want to come here that much, but I want you guys to come along for the ride. I want you to learn, but don't settle for Steve Noble coming to the Museum of the Bible. You need to come to the Museum of the Bible, and I don't care if you're listening all the way out on the West Coast, if you're somewhere in the Middle States, or if you're here on the East Coast. We happen to live in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's only a 4-hour drive up to D.C., and this is something a friend of mine Brooke Medina and her husband were in here earlier today, and she said, as a Christian, it was so encouraging, Dr. Zeiss, for her to see something that's this world class. It really is. This is the nicest museum I've ever been in. And to see it from top to bottom, wall to wall, every single floor, every single exhibit, all about the Bible and exalting God's word. She was so encouraged by that. So that was really cool to hear. And they were thrilled that they got to come in and take a sneak peek today. But speaking of kind of the goals of the Museum of the Bible, what are kind of the main reasons that you guys are doing this?
Well, it's pretty simple. The Greens had the vision first to build the museum, and they determined very quickly, you know, it really needs to be non-sectarian. So we don't advocate any one faith tradition or any one religion. We just advocate the Bible, and we think the Bible will speak for itself. So our mission is basically this. We invite all people to engage with the Bible, its history, its narrative, and its impact. So that's hence the themes throughout the museum, narrative, impact. And then there are two takeaways that we want every visitor to take away with them. The first one is, wow, that was the most incredible museum experience I've ever had. And the second one is this. You know, I think there's something to this Bible, book, and maybe I should get a little more engaged with it. So those are the two takeaways in addition to the mission.
Well, you know, and I really appreciate it. And I know some people are griping, which is what we do because we're human beings and we're fallen. But some people griping, you know, it's not evangelical enough, la da 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 da. But if you made it too evangelical, you're going to cut out a whole group of people, namely the lost, who we want to win over. We want to come experience it, because when you start going through it, like especially on the third floor, Story of the Bible, when we went through the Hebrew Bible entrance, then the Old Testament area, the world of Jesus of Nazareth, the New Testament area, the New Testament theater, and that New Testament theater, that's the one that's 270 degrees, right?
Oh, it's amazing.
And so it starts off as a tiny little screen and then gets wider and wider. Right. And then by the end of the story, this is the New Testament story, it's all the way out to both sides, 270 degrees. And it is all about Christ and all about the disciples and all about the gospel. And it's spread throughout the world. It's just overwhelming. And so it will, God's word never comes back void. It will be powerful in transforming life.
And you know, Steve, I think that we have like 18 or 20 theaters where you can see videos, et cetera. And I think that one probably is going to have the biggest impact. It tells the story of the New Testament in 12 minutes. it's pretty amazing.
Well, the history of the Bible too on that's the fourth floor, and again, you start walking through the exhibits, and they use drive-through history, which now we're a homeschooling family, so we're really familiar with that, but he's really effective, hilarious guy, but also a really effective storyteller. I couldn't believe the technology involved in the museum. I've never been in this place as technologically advanced as this place.
You know, Steve, I was in higher education all my career up until now. And if anybody is in education, they know that the more you get people to participate and do things, the better they learn. So from the beginning, we decided this would be an interactive museum for young people as well as older people. And we put $42 million in technology alone in this, you know, in this museum, from the digital guide that we talked about a moment ago, to the LED ceiling, to the video mapping on the ceilings and the sides of the theater. It's just pretty amazing.
Well, it's like one thing after another. That's what you turn a corner and there's more things that just absolutely take your breath away. And the technology. Now I'm 51. My son is here. He's 16, and our youngest of four, our daughter Caroline, is here. She's 12. They were engaging in those screens and touch screens and flipping through stuff and taking quizzes and looking at things. They were doing that because that's their normal mode of communication.
Absolutely. Young people and millennials will love it here. Everything is touching, and I mean it's all about interactivity with computers.
Yeah.
And I want to get in something though.
Yes.
This museum has no admission charge. Of course we still have to pay the rent and pay for people. We are a nonprofit, so we have suggested donations, but there's no admission charge. So anybody, if they didn't have the $15 to come to a normal museum or 20 or whatever it is, they can come to this one.
Yeah.
Because we want all people to get engaged with the Bible. However, we recommend this. If you're coming, be sure and go online, Museum of the Bible, and get your timed tickets. If you don't get timed tickets, chances are you're going to have a problem getting in.
Especially in the next few months.
Especially in the next few months. So that goes for Amazing Grace, too, if they want to see it. By the way, it starts tomorrow.
It does start tomorrow.
And,
wow.
their first production is tomorrow evening. If they want to see Amazing Grace, and I've seen part of it, it's fabulous. They need to go online also, Museum of the Bible, and then they can punch the link to
because you've got the 500-seat theater.
470.
470. And then it's got all these kind of, they look like scrolls up the side walls and across the ceiling. And they project onto that, too, besides what's happening on the
right.
stage, right?
That's the indoor video mapping. It's meant to look like a tabernacle. The early tabernacles, you know, were made out of cloth or some animal skins.
Well, tell us real quick about the digital docent. We got about 2 minutes left. Because I want people to understand how customized and how specific it can
be. Well, first of all, it'll ask you your name. You'll tell it so it can be a little more personalized. Then it will ask you some questions about history, narrative, and what your interests are, and then you'll put it on a table and you'll point out the things you think you're most interested in, and it'll load up, and then it will say, how much time do you have? 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours?
So it determines your pace.
It determines your pace.
Wow.
And how and your trail through the museum. And if you slow down, I'm told it will tell you to speed up or you're not going to make it.
That's so funny. And because when you use that's the thing. You can come back and forth. And then for children as well, because there's all kinds of, there's a whole children's section. And again, because of the technology, children can engage in lots of different ways. We had other friends here today who had four children from 14 on down, and they were all engaging too. But there's a whole children's track too.
Yeah, it is. It's great fun. I've seen them in there. It's like a, remember the early days of, I've forgotten the name of those, where they go get cheese to the cheese factories, or I've forgotten what they're called. Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, yeah, Chuck E. Cheese.
The kids were doing everything, running around. That's what they look like. They look like little bees running around.
That's exactly
around,
right.
Having
fun. Dr. Zeiss, it's great to have you in here. I look forward to having you on again when I come back up here. Thanks for you for your tireless work for the museum and your excitement and your dedication to this. We're blessed and so excited to see how God is going to use it.
Thank you, Steve.
You're very welcome.
Really appreciate
Thanks
it.
For being here. When we come back, we're going to have another great guest. Dr. David Trobisch is going to be here, and we're going to be talking about some more of the technical detailed aspects. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live from the Museum of the Bible. And we were talking to Dr. Tony Zeiss earlier, who's the executive director. And he reminded me, and I need to remind you, before you drive out here, before you come up, before you fly in, make sure you go to Museum of the Bible's website, because you're going to have to get reserve a ticket time, because it is going to be absolutely flooded here. You just talk about that we had the great flood with Noah, right? It's going to happen again to a certain extent here at the Museum of the Bible, because we've all been hearing about it and have been excited about it for months for a lot of people, for years for some of us. The first time I encountered any of this stuff was with the Passages exhibit in Charlotte, which I think was 4 or 5 years ago. And then to find out that the Museum of the Bible was coming, and the things that you see here, the acquisitions that have come from all over the world and biblical antiquities, really takes your breath away. And it's amazing to see how much scriptural evidence is out there in the history of the Bible. And one of the people involved with all of that, Dr. David Trobisch, who joined the Museum of the Bible as director of collections in 2014. And he really focuses on lecturing and writing and building relationships for the museum with various institutions, not only in the U.S., but Europe and abroad for acquisitions and exhibitions. Dr. Trobisch, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Steve.
It's great to have you here. So, you know, you've been involved in a lot of education and New Testament teaching. You've taught at Yale out in Missouri. You hail from Austria, and you, like you said earlier off the air, you kind of live on an airplane. But tell us about your involvement with the Museum of the Bible, and what did you know about it before it started, and then what's your job been? What have you been working on for the last 3 years?
Yeah. So my training is a training as a New Testament scholar, which means I have to learn the ancient languages, mainly, you know, Greek, Hebrew, Latin, but also can do Aramaic and other languages that are necessary. But I have a specialty within this wide field of New Testament scholarship, and that's manuscripts. So before books were printed, everything had to be copied by hand. So everything that survives that's older than the 16th century only survived because there were people who actually made copies of that. And of the New Testament, for example, we have 6,000 of those handwritten copies, and this is one of my field.
Yeah, I remember when I went to that passages exhibit, I was taking a New Testament class at the time at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is back in Raleigh, North Carolina. And our professor loved to show us pictures of various fragments and some of the New Testament things. And I remember seeing P39. And then we came down to Charlotte. I did my show from the passages exhibit. And we're walking around a corner, and all of a sudden there behind a very thick glass case was a P39 fabric.
A fragment.
And I'm looking at it going, hold on a second. I saw that on a screen. Now, are you telling me that's the real thing? What is it like for you to be able to kind of see and be around these fragments that are that old? It's really remarkable.
I think you captured it well. It's a very strong emotional experience. It doesn't necessarily go through the brains.
Yeah.
And we have, items like that. We have several items in the collections with New Testament text that haven't been published yet. And so the next time the critical editions are updated, it will be part of it. Or you mentioned P39, but we also have like the Bodmer Papyrus of the Psalms, which is the oldest copy in existence of the Psalms from a Christian Bible.
How far back does that go?
Dating is always one of those things. It's 3rd to 4th century.
Amazing. Mm. Just amazing. And so how have you felt about the way the collections come together for here at the Museum of the Bible?
It's been a long, long path with many, many people that we were engaged and that we were talking to. I mean, the curatorial department together with the people who do all the logistics, and so it's probably about 30 people, and then there are 10 more internationally that work for us. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to tell the story of the Bible in a way that you can get an overview. So for the permanent part on the history floor, you will go in there and you will see what writing meant, before anyone knew how to spell Israel.
Yeah.
So really very old. It starts with Babylonian literature that has some of the same stories that also show up in the Old Testament, like the story of the Great Flood. Yeah, is there at 4,000 years ago already.
Yeah.
And then you walk through the Hebrew Bible. This museum is a museum of the Jewish Bible and the Christian Bible. Tried to get the whole story. You have their Dead Sea Scrolls, one of the biggest discoveries that were made in the 20th century.
My children were fascinated by that, with the Dead Sea Scrolls, because they're like, so where did they find this? And I was telling them the power of the Dead Sea Scrolls, which really gave us almost a 1,000-year jump in the age of some of the scrolls and the documents and everything that had there. And because of the technology, I wanted to ask you about that. You have the fragments and everything, the antiquities, but to be able to marry that with technology, I've never seen that done to this extent before. So what's that mean to you as a scholar?
Well, it's very nice to work for an institution that has the means and the will, to really be cutting edge when it comes to this kind of research. And technology is something that also our donors are interested in supporting us very much. When you have a tiny little fragment of something that's that old, and the Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls are, before our time.
To say the least.
A century before Christ. Now, this is when they were written. And you just have a little piece of it. There's a lot of thinking that has to go on to how much can we recreate the whole manuscript?
Right.
Also the question, how do we know it's really that old, how can you identify a text if you only have a handful of letters and they're not there completely? And there's much discussion. I mean, these are not things that you just put them in a machine, you get a result.
Right.
But you need to have very highly specialized and educated people who will discuss it. And we don't always agree with each other.
Right.
But that's the process.
Yeah.
That makes it interesting.
That's right. Mm. What's your hope for the average person that comes through? Whether they're an evangelical Christian or just kind of a more garden variety Christian or a Jewish person or a skeptic, an agnostic, an atheist, what's your hope as a scholar for the history of the Bible and that aspect of the museum? What's your goal? What's your hope there?
Well, my hope is that the way we present it, that we wouldn't, that we're welcoming, people who've never darkened the door of a church would walk in there and they wouldn't be turned off by something, that just doesn't fit. And just as much those who maybe belong to a different faith tradition. Let's say a Greek Orthodox Christian who, very, very different from a Pentecostal in the U.S., the way their services go. So this is really something to make it positive, to take something that they already know. The experience should be like this. Oh, I knew that. I knew. Oh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So this kind of feeling. Also, one can easily, you know, you may have experienced it in the classroom, you know, talk to students in a way that makes them look stupid because they don't know enough about
right.
it.
Yeah. It's kind of the ivory tower thing.
Yeah. And that's what we don't want to do at all. Yeah, so we like hands-on. We want everyone to be able to understand what's there. But some of the lessons are actually, you know, maybe surprising for our people. And this is also what we want, especially in the U.S. You know, many Christians stay in the community where they became Christians,
right.
and they stay there all their life. They don't go around very much.
Right.
So it'd be nice to see, you know, what for a Lutheran, I'm a Lutheran.
Yeah.
What's important to a Baptist when it comes to studying the Bible, for example?
Yeah.
And this is one of our challenges. For example, there's a wall that only has Bibles that you can buy today in the United States. So something that your neighbor could have. Well, there are 8 different kinds of Bibles with different numbers of books, different arrangements. Not everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're used to their Bible, and that's what they call the Bible.
Well, it does. It exposes you to a lot of different perspectives on the Bible. And I think to the point of conversation, even with my children here, and when my wife comes, she's actually in Israel right now on a Holy Land tour. But when she comes, it'll spark all kinds of conversation because there's things that you didn't know. You know, I've taken Old Testament classes. I've taken New Testament classes. I've been down that road. But to be here at the Museum of the Bible to see the artifacts that are here, the fragments that are here, plus the technology, it was a feast for me as a Christian and somebody that studied the Bible somewhat seriously.
Yes.
But it was one thing after another, just was like another door being opened. It was amazing.
Yeah. And I already said, you know, I'm a specialist with manuscripts.
Yeah.
And when you copy something by hand, there's just no way you can copy a whole book without making a mistake or, you know, just missing a line or adding something or so. This is not our view that we usually have because we're used to printed books.
Yeah.
And if you have, you know, you get an edition.
We're this side of the Gutenberg press, so we don't even think about that. You know, 95% of American households. But, yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, studying Qumran and what happened there in the Dead Sea Scrolls and seeing – really, over time, the amazing accuracy over that much time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because of the manuscript evidence, you start to go, okay, hold on a second. I think there's more veracity to the Bible than I had originally thought.
Yeah. And the specialty about the Christian Bible is that it was published in Greek. Now, if you read the New Testament, when Jesus is quoted on the cross, he speaks Aramaic. Greek was not the language that he would speak when he spoke to farmers and peasants or so. So readers of the New Testament already know that they're reading a translation when, they, for example, they read the Sermon on the Mount. And when it comes to the Old Testament, they also know that it was originally in Hebrew, most of it. And so as they write, as they copied it, these manuscripts, they wanted it to sound Greek all the way through. That's the same thing we do today with our revised editions, you know. So language doesn't stay the way it is. It changes. And this is one of the reasons why, as you know, through about 1,200, 1,300 years of copying by hand, they constantly would update the text. So there are always minor changes between two manuscripts.
And it walks you through that whole process, which has been really amazing. Dr. Trobisch, thanks so much for being here. We hope to see you again. Congratulations. Here you are on opening week. It's really, really an amazing amazing thing to experience. Thank you for all your hard work on it.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Mm-hmm. It's great to be with you. Okay, when we come back, what's it like for a teenager and a 12-year-old? You'll find that out. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It's Called to Action Radio, live from the Museum of the Bible. And you need to get here as soon as you can. I cannot possibly explain to you just how breathtaking this place is, how high-tech it is, how beautiful it is. This is the nicest museum I've ever been to in my life. And the fact that it's all about the Bible and the fact that it's literally 3 blocks away from the Capitol. I'm looking out at the top of the building. It's kind of this big glass area that kind of looks like a scroll that's unfolding. There's the Manna restaurant up there and a garden, the 470-seat theater up there. Amazing Grace starts playing tomorrow night. And literally, we're 3 blocks off the mall. I'm looking out this window. We're up on the 5th floor looking at our nation's capital. And the nicest museum in Washington, D.C. is now completely dedicated to the scriptures, to the Jewish scriptures, which of course we would call the Old Testament, and the New Testament. It is just absolutely amazing. But it's easy for me to say that. I mean, I'm 51. I've, you know, been to seminary and all that kind of stuff. I was up here in May, but now I've got my son and my daughter, the younger of the four. So Clay is here. He's 16, and Caroline's here, and she's 12. They're both Caroline turns 13 in December, and Clay turns 17 in February. But guys, let me just ask you, what's been your impression today? Caroline, we'll start with you, ladies first. What's been your impression of this museum today since we got here at about, 10:45? It's been a long day.
Well, I thought that it was really cool how, high-tech it was and different from most of the museums in D.C., and it was really cool to see all of, the museum, reflecting off of the Bible.
Yeah, the whole thing's about the Bible, one floor after another. Clay, what about for you? I mean, you guys have heard me talk about it. You know, you kind of knew I was involved. But for you coming here and seeing this, what's been your impression today?
Well, I think it's been really, really cool the same way that Caroline said about how it's really high-tech. For me as a high schooler, obviously that's pretty something that attracts my attention, is it being high-tech. And just the fact that no matter where you go, you're learning either new stuff or you're able to reflect on stuff that you've learned in the past. So it's just always really, really cool just to see this stuff that is all in the Bible.
Yeah. Were you guys surprised by how nice it is and how high-tech it is? Was that a surprise to you, Caroline?
Yeah, it was quite the surprise.
Now, you've been to some museums before. Where does this one rank? Have you ever been anywhere like this?
No, I've never been to a museum like this before.
Yeah, how about for you, Clay?
This is definitely at the top of the list.
Yeah, at the top of the list. And now, Clay, you're in the civics class right now that I teach, and we're looking at things down there that we've already talked about, the Mayflower Compact. We're looking at John Locke as a political thinker. We're looking at the Declaration of Independence and what happened with our founding fathers. For the fact that, hey, listen, you're looking right out there. That's the U.S. Capitol right out the window. For you, as a young Christian, as an American, and somebody that's starting to learn about this stuff, what does it mean to you that this incredible museum all about the Bible is located right here in Washington, D.C.? Do you kind of see the interesting angle there?
Yeah, I think it really stands out. Like crazy, I would say, because the fact that it's in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and it's a museum only about the Bible is pretty amazing and fascinating, the fact that they were able to do it here.
Yeah. The power of that is just amazing, because we wouldn't have this country if it weren't for the sake of what God's blessings and God's grace and what our founding fathers and what the original people that came over here knew about the Bible. The Bible drove the whole thing. Caroline, what's been your favorite part? Tell me about some of the different things you saw here today that you love. So again, Caroline's 12 and Clay is 16, so you're getting the perspective of some younger people here.
Well, I like the Nazareth Museum, I forgot what that's called.
Well, that's the whole Nazareth section, which is a remake of life in Nazareth, the streets, the olive trees, the buildings, the whole thing. Why do you like that? We've been in there. You've been in there three or four times today.
Well, it was really cool to see what it would have been like living in those times. And I think they really portrayed that well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of feels like you're there, doesn't it?
Yeah. It feels like you're actually in Nazareth. It's really cool.
And what about you, Clay? What's been some of your favorite parts?
Obviously, what Karen said, the Nazareth part, that was really cool. And I love to see physical examples of things.
Yeah.
Like reading stuff and hearing about things is okay, but it's a lot easier for me to learn about things if it's something physical that I see. But probably the favorite part for me so far has been the New Testament movie that we watched. I think it was probably a 30 minutes.
So that's the one that started with a small screen and kept getting bigger and then went 270 degrees. So totally to your right and to your left and this whole circular thing. Why did you like that?
I think it just gives a really, really, really good example it shows extremely well how that was with Jesus and the disciples and how they related in the whole timeline of Jesus passing and then coming back and returning. It was just really cool to see all that on a camera and everything.
Because the earlier Dr. Zeiss told me there's 42 different videos that you can watch. And then we caught some of the history of the Bible. That was with the drive-through history guy. Caroline, did you like the movies too? We saw there was another movie about John the Baptist and Herod. So that was really cool. Did you like the movies? What did that mean to you?
Yeah, I thought the movies were a nice extra thing. And they were very educational. Because me as a middle schooler, I like to know personally more stuff about the Bible as much as I can know. And I'm like more of a visual learner, so it was nice to be able to have a video screen.
We'll talk about that. You guys have been to church, been to Sunday school. We talk about the scriptures at home. You guys have been had a lot of teaching on it. But is it different to come here, or how is it different to come to the Museum of the Bible and see it in all the different ways and all the different ways it unpacks the Bible? You know, we go back to the impact of the Bible that's both in America and around the world, the story of the Bible, and then the history of the Bible as it's been translated and brought through the last couple thousand years. How is it different than just kind of being in church?
Well, in church, it's more like the lessons are like helping you as a Christ follower. But here, when you come to the Museum of the Bible, it's really showing you like the history behind the Bible and like its effects, as you said, like effects on the government and everything. And it shows you more of like more, I don't know how to say it, but like more of the Bible.
Yeah, yeah, it's foundations and where it came from. Yeah. What about for you, Clay? You've been down this road. You're about 5 years older than your sister. You've been to church, all that stuff, middle school, Sunday school stuff. How is it different here?
Well, at church, it's the Bible is laid out as just one story, and you're going through different lessons and everything. But here, I sort of see it as it's separated into multiple stories, and it's not just one book, and it shows how the different timelines and everything. So it's really a quite different contrast from learning about the Bible at church and stuff like that, because it totally shows you different examples of things that were going on back then, and it kind of takes away the idea of what Caroline was saying, like trying to learn things to become a better Christian, turns it more into just learning about the history.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a friend on Facebook Live, Eddie, that brought this up. He said, you know, it's a place where the Bible comes alive. So is your perspective of the Bible changed because of all the information, all the history, all the impact that you've seen today? Is it a bigger deal now than it was before we got here today? How has it impacted your view of the Bible in general?
Well, I was thinking about this earlier, like walking around the museum and seeing all these artifacts and how it's just all pointing to God in the Bible. I really started to understand how like real it was. Like it felt real to me, because like I've always kind of thought like, well, what if it's like all made up? But like today I really realized the Bible is true. It's all true. Like here's the proof. So
yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, you know, me at 51, I ask questions and stuff too. But when you come through a place like this, all of a sudden, you know, it's the book that we study. It's the way you've been raised. But all of a sudden, yeah, it becomes very real. What about for you, Clay?
Well, I think a lot of times, most stories and books are like fiction and stuff like that. But the Bible obviously isn't. But it really turns a story into just facts when you're here. So you can see everything physically. You can see how things progressed and how the Bible was translated over time. Everything's just really cool and eye-opening to see all that stuff.
Okay, so now I'm going to put you guys on the spot, and you got to do a marketing job for Museum of the Bible. So, Caroline, what would you say to people? Why should people, young and old, people your age, people my age, why should they come see the Museum of the Bible as soon as is humanly possible?
Well, I think me as a middle schooler, like, I know that you, like, you didn't really grow up in a Christian home, and, like, so, like, a lot of people don't really have that, like, growing up in a Christian home, and that's why I want to, like, gain as much knowledge as I can, because, like, I'm, like, privileged enough to grow up in a Christian home, so I want to, like, take in all of that knowledge. And it's really just a great experience overall. Like, I have just, like, seen so much, like, it's, like, incredible. I can't begin to explain it.
And like Dr. Zeiss said earlier, if you watched every video, read everything, interacted with every digital display where you can do Q&A and you can do a little test and you can go back and forth, it would take 9 8-hour days, literally 72 hours to go through every single piece of information that's here at the Museum of the Bible. What about for you, Clay? Why should people young and old come here as soon as possible?
Well, just like how you were saying, it would, how he said that it would take like
nine 8-hour days.
It sort of reminds me of the hook at the beginning of like a literature story. It grabs the reader's attention, and then you want to continue reading.
Wow.
So it's like the same idea. You come in, you see this stuff, and you want to keep learning because just of how fascinating it is to see all that in person.
Yeah, because you never – hey, listen, let's face it. You never experience the Bible in a way like this. Now, your mom right now is in Israel. So when she comes back, she's going to be all flipped out. Because all of a sudden she walked where Jesus walked. This is the second closest thing you can get to the experience of the Bible is coming here to the museum. So, on a scale from 1 to 10, Caroline, where does the Museum of the Bible rate?
It's definitely a 10.
Definitely a 10. Clay?
777.
What a great answer. Okay, so for all of you on Facebook Live, and if you want to join me, I'm going to take my phone, which is doing Facebook Live right now, and I'm going to walk out into the main stairwell, which is this massive, beautiful. You got to see this place to believe it. And I'm going to walk out there. So if you want to join me on Facebook Live, I'll give you a little tour right quick. Just an amazing, amazing experience. Museum of the Bible. Get to the website, because if you're coming anytime soon, you're going to need to reserve your ticket time to get in. It's really amazing. Museumofthebible.org. You got to get here. Opens to the public this Saturday. This is Steve Noble. It's Call to Action Radio. And God willing, I'll talk to you again tomorrow. But Facebook Live, stay with me, because I'm going to take you out into the museum in just a second.